In these five sessions, we hope to at least together to get a glimpse of what it might mean to create new communal realities, to build new definitions, practical definitions of community that are relevant to the changing character of our nations in the Americas. And as we discussed a couple of days ago, sometime in the next century, the majority of the population in this nation will be people of color. Perhaps even before the halfway point or the midpoint for the next century. That's the reality on our hands. And it seems to me that what the challenge is facing folks like you and I is whether we're going to continue to allow the different racial groups in our nation to continue drifting apart like islands caught in continental drift, or whether we really will take action and be about the business of creating a new definition of community that is inclusive. Just to take a look in broad brushstrokes where we've been and where we're going, on our first session we dealt with identity, community, and diversity, and suggested to you an ancient religious symbol from Taoism as a clue relative to the importance of diversity, that the experience of otherness, we suggested to you, is part of personal identity and community identity, and that the symbol itself is a metaphor for unity or wholeness, which suggests that wholeness has something to do with being in relationship to otherness. And of course, our experience has been that we avoid otherness and difference, and that we really seek to be in community with those who are like ourselves. And as a matter of fact, in times past, there's been a fair amount of diversity in the midst of people who are like ourselves. But the historical situation is changing so dramatically that now we have new realities on our hands, and we have to make hard decisions in order that human community can take the next step. Then yesterday we worked a bit on images and behavior, the power of stereotypes. And Nadine suggested to you that behavior really flows out of the images that we live out of, the mental pictures that we live out of. And the messages that are constantly bombarding us tend to either reinforce our perceptions of the world or contradict them. And we generally seek situations in which the messages reinforce our pictures of the world. And we saw an example of the way that worked with that little snippet from the video last night with Jane Elliott's experiment with her students in the third grade back in 1968. Now today we're going to continue to move beyond, but also work on the business of images and talk about how you can begin to render stereotypes obsolete. Stereotypes are probably always going to be with us, but like balloons, maybe we can learn to let the air out of them. So today we're going to work a bit on how do we go about letting the air out of some of the stereotypes that continue to bedevil us. And then on Friday, we'll move to begin to think together about some of the pathways of change in our communities in relation to building new communities, a new understanding of community. And then Saturday morning at 10:45, we'll deal with a session dealing with building diversity. And the part of the title that was left out of the bit on the kiosk that we've put up here is building communities that value diversity. And that really is the challenge before us. And some of us in our denominations, for example, have talked about inclusivity, are building inclusive communities. And I think that attempts to capture the same value that we'd be interested in there. Now I want to take just a few minutes and kind of tie a few things together for us, and then we're going to do a little exercise together that helps us begin to work on the business of shifting images or dealing with the power of stereotypes by fostering new images, new pictures of possible relationships. But first, just a quick pull together of some things we touched on before. In terms of dealing with racism, we think that there are some temptations and traps it's important to be aware of. And we shared these with the group last week that we worked with, and if you've heard them before, well, you can listen again, and perhaps this will be new for some of the folks in the room. First, it's important, I think, to be aware that in dealing with racism, guilt-tripping is finally not the objective. It simply is not adequate or sufficient to beat people over the head for who they've been and who they are. One of the things that tends to happen there is that we harden our hearts. When we become aware of our participation, our personal participation in racism, and somebody tries to do a little guilt trip on us, some of us simply will harden our hearts. The other option is to become disempowered. And quite frankly, we need people of conscience who are empowered in these days, not disempowered. Now, guilt is a reality. It's a part of our history. And as we suggested the other day, racism is the problem of white America, not people of color. It is our issue. Now, without a doubt, all of us live in the grip of racism as an institutionalized reality and as a fundamental myth that is part of American history. We all live in its grip, but it's fundamentally our problem, we of European American ancestry. Secondly, there's a temptation that we've called liberalism, sort of presupposing that there are a few of us around the room who might think of ourselves as good liberals. And that has to do with the attitude that, well, we're really all the same. That underneath, we're all alike. Well, no, we are not. We have occupied the same continent for a few hundred years, but until you and I take a little trip, we cannot claim all of our history that our brothers and sisters of color live with every day. And none of us have had to struggle with the experience of snatching our sense of integrity and selfhood from the jaws of death, so to speak, every day. And we'll reflect a little bit more on that in a few minutes. We're not really all the same. I was mentioning to the group last week that our 22-year-old son, who's just graduated from university, is a rather imposing young man. He's very dark, and he has struggled for 22 years to come to terms with what it means for him to be an African-American with dark skin. And for a European-American of pale skin to suggest to him we're really all alike is to trivialize his struggle and his journey. That leads me to the third trap or temptation, and that is a kind of trivialization. You might even call it cheap reconciliation. It's a little similar to Bonhoeffer's understanding of cheap grace. Well, all right, we've had a difficult history and you all have suffered in the past, but I didn't have anything personally to do with that, so let's just pick up and go from here and build the future together. Well, for us to say that is to trivialize the history of our people and is not to deal with our own journey, much less what people of color have experienced, and is to minimize, really, the experiences of people of color. There's a little journey that we've got to take, and we'll talk a bit about that. European Americans will not be in charge of the agenda and the conversations that need to happen. We have the possibility of participating in those conversations, but first comes a certain difficult repentance, to quote James Baldwin. And then fourthly, you may have noticed, or you may not have, that we're an interracial family. I say you may not have, because sometimes I'm surprised somebody suggests to me, you're married to a black woman. And no, I'm married to Nadine. We told the group last week that these days marriage itself is a difficult enough challenge. We're certainly not suggesting the key to racism is that everybody needs to go out and pick a mate of the opposite of another race. And then fifthly, fifth and sixth kind of go together. And it's the old conservative liberal argument about racism and social justice. One of the temptations has to do with overemphasizing individual responsibility. It's the bootstrap approach. Well, by golly, I did it, so you can too. Or look at Clarence Thomas. If he did it, so can you.
Did what?
Leave that up to you to decide. But the difficulty with that attitude is that it minimizes the power social processes, institutional practices, and mythologies that operate all around us, most of which we as European Americans are not even aware of. Now, the other side of the coin, however, is a little bit of the liberal heresy, and it's the victim presumption. It's excusing people from personal responsibility because they've been victims of social injustice. Yeah, sure, all of that is true. But at the same time, the temptation is to deny the dignity of individual responsibility and self-reliance. So both of those have to be paid attention to in the struggle and the wrestling with racism. Now, the pernicious oppression of racism, if I might call it that. Let me take this down. Spend a few minutes here. By the way, I don't know if you could recognize our artwork. This is the video Eye to Eye. My wife thought it was two little bugs. Nadine spoke to you last night about the reality of double consciousness. And for some of you, that may have been a new metaphor. But all of us have at least a hint of the experience of double consciousness. Anytime you're in a relationship with another human being, a conversation, have you noticed that at the same time that you're talking with that other human being, you're a step back, kind of auditing the conversation, monitoring what's going on, and checking out who you are in the midst of that. Have you noticed that? Well, what Nadine was suggesting, that for people of color, there's an additional dimension of consciousness that's present out of necessity. It has to do with survival. She said it has to do with thinking white while you as a black person or an Indian or a Mexican American are in the midst of a conversation with a person of European American heritage. That is, you have to be looking at yourself through their eyes as you are participating in that conversation. And that has to do with survival. And that's double consciousness. Now, I don't know if W.E.B. Du Bois ever read Soren Kierkegaard, but they probably would have had some interesting conversations together about consciousness. And then Nadine talked about, in relation to this, but slightly different, internalized oppression. And we saw last night how quickly children begin to, as Jane Elliott said, live down to our expectations. You bombard people with messages 24 hours a day relative to what it means to be black or Indian, Native American. And by golly, the tendency is for people to begin to live out of the messages that you've been bombarding them with. Two movies I'd recommend to you if you've not seen them. One of them is Soldier Story. Any of you seen that? Soldier Story. A powerful movie that's been out for several years now that really dramatizes the whole business of internalized oppression. And then another one's a fairly new one called Boys in the Hood. Have you seen that? How many have seen that one? If you get a chance, see it. It'll help you understand internalized oppression, but it will also help you understand institutionalized racism and the force and the power of the social structures and the practices that the people are dealing with and wrestling with. Now finally, just in terms of putting some things together, what we've suggested is that maybe this kind of a visual metaphor begins to capture the sense of community that we think is on the horizon for us. It has to do with unity and diversity. It has to do with intentionally putting yourself in relationship with folks who are other than you in order to use your flesh and blood as the experimental material to begin to weave the fabric of new community, to begin to create the awareness, the consciousness of new kinds of community relationships. And we'll deal a bit more with that on Friday. But before we can really participate in that with power as European Americans, there's a certain difficult repentance that's necessary, and it has to do with our historical baggage. That's suitcases there. It's almost like there's a train platform out in the wilderness, and the train has left, and all the passengers have gone, and there's some suitcases sitting unclaimed on the railroad platform, and guess whose they are? They're ours. They're ours. And they have to do with claiming our heritage. They have to do with owning our history. And until we do, we cannot move into the future and help create the new community dynamics. Until we own our past, we are stuck in the past. And we are stuck in the grip of racism. So there is some baggage that's ours to pick up and take home. And once we do, well, we can unload them and throw them away and move into the future. That's cosmic permission. But it's ours to claim. Now we need to turn and take a little bit of a look at images, messages, and how we can begin to think together about doing some changing.
Okay. I'm glad you all are so rested this afternoon. We're ready to do another exercise with you. And before I start that and give you a bit of explanation about this brief exercise, we have some books that we want to take a look at. Write down their names if you would like to get copies of those. We have some material that we passed out for Monday, looking at our relationship to differences. And then at the end of our session, if you're interested in other material that we've used as resources, we'll have a tablet ready for you to sign your name before you leave, and then another tool to take with you. But this afternoon, I want to spend some time looking at the images, messages, and behavior, but you're going to provide the content for us and for yourselves. And this workshop has to do with how you can begin to change images, messages, and behavior in your particular situations. So what you would do first of all, once I decide what groups you're going to be in, or you can call out names, is look at the old messages, the old images, and old behavior, and then work to create new images, new messages, and new behavior. Now, I don't mean exactly just switching it around to say opposite, because then you kind of bring in, I guess, value screens and try to do things differently as an opposite turnaround. That's not exactly what I mean. I mean new and different, creatively new and different. Think of new images. And one of the sessions I remember sharing with someone, if we had the image of the world being a living organism, for instance, we probably would have different types of systems. We would see more of interdependence. That's the kind of imagery I mean. So I have suggested here, workplace could be a place to look at this kind of exercise. Local church, if we have community people who are involved in activities around their communities. And do we have any teachers in this group by any chance? You might want to look at considered classrooms, or if you're Sunday school teachers of a local church, you might want to consider your local church Sunday school classroom at this activity and exercise as we participate in. So we want to take about 10 to 15 minutes working in these different groups and looking at the ways that you analyze the old behaviors, messages, and images, and then create the new ones. So who's interested in a group of looking at this through their workplace? Anyone? Raise your hand. Anybody interested in doing that?
What are the different choices?
Yeah. Say them again, I'll write them up.
Uh-huh. Workplace is one. The local church is another. Your community. And then I asked if there were teachers in the room, if they were interested in looking at their classroom. Anybody? That's the fourth one. Okay.
And did you mention church? Did I hear you say
yes,
Sunday
I said
school?
The Sunday school classroom.
Could that be just local church in general or just Sunday school?
Well, it's the local church is pretty big, and I figured that if you want to focus on the Sunday school classroom, You could do that there too. So it's just the Sunday school classroom. It could be Del Ed classrooms.
Okay. So okay. All our children at.
Mm-hmm. How many groups we have?
Five.
Okay. Who's interested in the workplace once again? Can we get any takers on that? Oh, we have 35 of these sheets. Okay, one or two. And if while you're gathering, you can think about that, we can move to together. Who's interested in the local church? You can bring your last comments to a close as we turn around a bit and try to hear how this exercise went for your group. Can you hear me? Kind of like you need a bullhorn, huh? We want you to be ready to do some sharing with different groups on how this exercise was helpful to you. We want to hear each of you talk about some portion of the exercise sheet. So, on the old behavior across the top from the we had two community groups, didn't we? From the community group up here, what was quickly an old behavior that you had? I'm just going to quickly jump around in the box. The community group up there.
The intermarriage was shunned.
Okay, that's an old behavior. In the community group over here, what's an image that you had?
Discriminating zoning laws.
Oh, all right. And from the local church group, what message in the message block under old behavior did you have?
Excluding people.
Just excluding people, basically.
Well, you can fit in as long as you like us.
Yeah.
You can fit in as long as you like us, is the message. All right. Under new behavior, this group was workplace. What's the new behavior?
Seeking new leadership that has an intentional commitment to evoke change.
Okay. Over here for the, is it the classroom group? Who's in the corner?
Yeah.
Classroom group. What is a new image? The middle box.
Providing open cultural history for students.
Okay. And then a message from?
There were two education groups, two classroom groups.
This group, the message, a new message.
The message that each child is equal worth.
Each child is of equal worth.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody want to hear a little bit more about how their groups worked in their different settings? Meaning, what were some of your striking challenges and words that you had as you worked as a group? Anyone? Go ahead.
Well, we were talking about these homeless Mexican Americans who worked out in the fields, and one of the first, you know, questions that just I'm sure was just reactionary, because a lot of people ask us about people on welfare and stuff like that, is like, you know, do these people want adequate housing? You know, and then we just, you know, it's like the people on welfare, you know, there's this image of, you know, maybe they want to stay on welfare for the rest of their life. You know, they've gotten comfortable with taking this money and, like, not working, you know, or anything.
And you call that's a attitude, behavior, or?
That would be an image.
Image, yeah. All right.
They don't want this stuff. You know, they aren't going out to get it. You know, they're just happy with being homeless out there and sleeping on the ground. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't have a good work ethic.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
They're lazy too.
What else strikes you?
There was another thing. You said images, and I said an old behavior. And what I should have read to you was they don't know how to keep up their property. That was an old image, and okay. It may be a new image. We may still have that. I mean, we don't know how to.
You mean you're?
We have a blank place down here, and
I've never
got
that far. Oh. Okay.
Got that far.
You didn't get that far. Okay. All right, what else strike you about this exercise?
In the workplace, we had a bit of a discussion about the image of quotas and promotions and earned versus unearned, and whether quota systems were helpful and not helpful. And we didn't really resolve it. We sensed, you know, some tension around that issue.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the
workplace.
Workplace and
in the image.
In the image.
Old
image.
And still is a new image, but still we still were struggling with certain things because the image of somebody of color in a position of authority sometimes brings this idea, well, they must not have earned that. Somehow they were given that position in the struggles.
Because of
that. So we were struggling with whether that really is, should be a new image or, you know, if that was really a helpful thing or not.
Okay. Others?
We heard one very harsh reality. Maybe you should tell about your community in Arkansas. It's just amazing.
Well, our community is retirement. There's about 4,000 residents, and they're all from the northern section coming down to find a warm climate, you know. And we don't have a person in there of color, and, you know, questioning that. Legally, they have to sell to them, there's no question, but they have insidious ways of trying to discourage them. And the surrounding little areas, you know, we're still fighting the Civil War down there, and it's kind of sad. I mean, we hardly ever see a colored person in our area. You get to the bigger cities like Little Rock and, you know, so forth, there they are. But in our area, they have just treated them to such an extent that they won't even attempt to live there.
So how did you work?
Sad thing. It's a sad thing.
So did you all discuss it as a group to work on a new...
Well, that was very harsh because he described some of the ways they have
in 1992
not allowing people of color.
Yeah, the realtors would discourage. Legally, you know, they have to sell to anyone, but they have all these different little gimmicks that they will discourage it and scare them. Scare tactics. It's kind of sad.
Okay.
Realtors
another form. Go ahead.
In virtually all of our communities use those same tactics.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
That's certainly not limited to the South. Realtors in St. Paul use those tactics.
Well, yeah. Churches do too, because one of the big drives in churches is anybody can join my church as long as they fit in with us. And if you don't fit in with us, that is, if you're not Norwegian and moderately well off, you won't like it here. And we'll just cold shoulder you, and you're going to really have to work to join. And we're not going to give you any help at all. If you fit in with us, we'd love to have you. If you don't fit in with us, go find your own place.
Okay, in your group, did you work on the new behavior, new images?
Well, we talked about being more inclusive, more variety in worship, things like this.
New curriculum.
New curriculum, changes like this, you know, preparing in advance, yeah.
And what about a message? What about the message?
Well, I think you just have to find a way to appreciate diversity and work toward it. But it's very difficult because this insidious idea that we're comfortable in our church, it works well. If you want to join us, you're welcome. But you have to fit us, not the other way around.
Did you find this tool somewhat helpful? In what way? Anyone?
It forced us to look at what we are doing.
Force you to look at what you're doing?
Yes.
Or not doing,
yes.
Okay. All right. Where else did you think you might be able to use something like this?
You besides community or the church?
Mm-hmm.
Your family?
Any other places?
Are you?
I'm sorry? Someone...
I just said my in-laws.
Your in-laws. And it's on tape. Okay. All right.
We won't tell a soul.
No, but it's on tape. Okay. What insights then have you gained by using this exercise? Go ahead.
Our group, I think, found it difficult to sometimes separate into the categories. We could tell, all right, here's the slogan, or here's the behavior, or here's what we want to change. But how did it begin? Who started it? Who's accountable for this behavior? And sometimes that was difficult. And then how do you stop it? It's almost like it's a circle, and you have to at some point attack that circular pattern and just move into it to provide this change.
Yeah, that's very helpful. The media works very very strongly on two dimensions, that is, images and messages. We take on the behavior. And if you watch how we do that, you look at the ways we respond to different people through what we have perceived and have been bombarded with messages. The media doesn't do the behavior part, but we can certainly see from the media how powerful it is where we get our images and messages, and a lot of the slogans.
We brought in some Vietnamese refugees, and our committee that did this, we discovered that of the 18 members of the committee, not one was born in Kenya. They were all outsiders, and they understood what it was to be an outsider. The people of Kenya did not want refugees to come, because they were thousands of miles away and they had no way to visualize. But once they came, once they were part of Kenya, that's different, because then they became our neighbors, not necessarily our friends, but they're part of the community, and we supported them. They gave money, they gave clothes, they gave all sorts of financial help once they were there. But when they were far away, they could have cared less, because they never experienced being away. Once they were part of the community, activity changed. And it's one of the kids came in, learned English, started on the basketball team, he's part of us now. And that's, you know, and I think that once you make a change like that, it often leads to fairly good results. But getting that first step is often very hard.
Well, do we have extras of these? Did you have extras in your groups, the ones that you didn't use? You're welcome to hold on to those and use them with in-laws and family educational settings. And we also have these attitudes toward differences in the riddle scale. But right now, we're just going to have a brief summation and get us out of here, and then we'll stick around for questions, comments.
Now, in just a couple minutes, you'll hear a bell ring for dinner. Don't get anxious. We'll be finished in time for you to get to dinner. Five books I'm going to mention to you that are up here. You can come and copy down if you want. If you're going to read only five books to understand racism, I'm sure you could pick five to be just as good, but these are five we suggest. Dismantling Racism is in the bookstore. It's a fine piece of work in understanding the institutional and cultural dimensions of racism and challenging the church to take on the task of dealing with racism. Who is Black is a tremendous piece of work in terms of the history of racial identity, the myth of racial identity in the United States. Yes?
I was just going to ask, are these all in the context of the U.S.?
Some of them are due more. You can't really deal with racism and just focus on the U.S. They focus on the U.S., but they bring in what's happened in other parts of the Americas.
So Bard's book has a chapter on global racism.
Yes, yes. Two Nations. This is a recently published book, which is very helpful in bringing us face to face with the reality of racial separation in our day now. And then Before the Mayflower, a classic written by Lerone Bennett, first published in 62, and then republished several times. And I recommend it to you as a tremendous piece of historical survey of the presence of people of color in the Americas, and focusing finally then on the United States. And then a little book by Angela Davis that we found intriguing, provocative, and helpful. It's called Women, Race, and Class. And it's especially helpful in getting a handle on the role that African-American women have played in our history, and it counters some of the difficult mythology about the impact of slavery on the African-American family. And Angela wants to suggest that the African-American family probably was the key to Africans surviving the experience of slavery, along with the church that was, you know, the religious imagination that was happening in the African-American community. Now, two images to leave you with. I don't know if on your TV you've seen a recent commercial that Arby's has done. You're familiar with Arby's, the fast food people? Well, they have a commercial that starts out and you finally gives you a message, a slogan, says, different is good. Have you seen that? Of course, the new image, they want to shift your image from the usual fast food hamburger to a fast food beef sandwich, sliced beef sandwich. So the image is a sliced beef sandwich. But the interesting message is, different is good. Isn't that intriguing? Different is good. When you're doing this exercise, especially important to focus on messages and images and actually be able to draw a picture of the new image. You're trying to get a hold of the new mental universe that you want to foster, the new perceptions that you want to foster. And finally, if you can draw them in graphic form, then you've probably got a hold of them. And then finally, to suggest that you and I are not unlike Adam and Eve. And wouldn't it be interesting if the significance, the import of that little story about Adam and Eve didn't have to do with apples at all, but it had to do with something else. Do you remember what both Adam and Eve did when they were confronted by God in relation to the apple?
They blamed each other.
Wouldn't it be interesting if the point of that story was assuming personal responsibility? We're like Adam and Eve, and the key to the future and our participation in the future is assumption of personal responsibility. And for European Americans, we don't really have a choice about being racists. Our choice has to do with being an intentional racists. Once we've owned the fact that we're racists, then we can jolly well decide to be either repenting racists or unrepenting racists. But at least we'll be out. We'll be in the open. We'll have come out of the closet, so to speak. Seems to me those are the options before us. And maybe the little story about Adam and Eve has a special message for us in relation to personal responsibility. Well, that dinner bell is going to ring shortly, so we'll just stop here.
On the age of 12 step, too, we could use the term recovering racist.
Yes, yes, very good. I'm a recovering racist. Not bad at all. Well, thank you for being here, and we'll see you again on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock.